Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey guys, welcome to TechPoint Africa podcast. My name is Emmanuel.
I'm Oluwani Femi.
I'm Bolu.
My name is Oganyeroma.
And I'm Chimgozuru.
So yeah, what's going on with tech today? Nifemi, you have something concerning fitness apps and what it is that taking away from us in exchange for being fit.
Okay, I should start with, it's not like many people care, but we still have to talk about it. So there is a new report by Mozilla, and they did an analysis on 32 mental health and prayer apps, and they found out that 29 out of that 32 do not have privacy for their users. There's nowhere that it's clear in their privacy settings where they can assure you that your data is actually safe. And is, as I mentioned earlier, many people do not really care, but it's something to worry about, because as it were, these kind of apps, they get intimate with you. They know when you're sad. They know if you're on depression pills. They know if you've ever had PTSD. They know when you're down. They know a lot of things about you, very intimate things. And they can't even assure you that this is how we will handle your data. And one of them that on the list, I see a number that are not very popular. One that is actually popular and I have on my phone presently is Calm, a meditation app. I downloaded it at a time when I was having issues with sleep. And it has sounds that can lull you to sleep. If you want bedtime stories, it can tell you. Actually, I stopped using it when it was asking me to subscribe. It's a subscription based app, but I use this for free for a while. And even though they have access to a lot of information about you, right, you can even put the information about your family on this Calm app. They can't tell you that they are keeping your data safe. The thing that keeps coming to my mind with these mental health apps, prayer apps, including fitness apps, is that although on the surface, right, they look like they are helping you. Of course, they are in a way, because well, it tells me then. They look like they are helping you, but they are still profit based. They have to get your data out to a third party that can target you for ads. It reminds me of sometimes last year, was it 2021 or 2020, it was 2021, around the time when WhatsApp was saying, it said that you agree to our privacy, updated privacy settings, or you'll be kicked out of the app. And there was like, is it a mini opera online that, why would WhatsApp do that? What do they need my data for? Meanwhile, WhatsApp is not even, they are not even requesting for as much as data points as these fitness apps, mental health apps request for. And begs the question, what are you really protecting? Do you even care about what you are protecting? So it's one of those times when we have to remind ourselves, if you can't answer the question that, do I want these people to know as this much information about me? And I think we shouldn't use those apps. That's just the thing. We did a poll at a time, right? It was still around this time that WhatsApp was, permit me to say, turning on your own. And we put WhatsApp beside Telegram, beside Signal. As it's public opinion that Signal is safer than those other platforms, than WhatsApp and Telegram, when it comes to your privacy, your data privacy. But you'd be surprised, the poll shows that people would rather go with something that is less safer in that context, which is WhatsApp, right, than Signal, because of what because of the utility you get. Most of the people in your circle use WhatsApp. If you disconnect from WhatsApp, you'll be losing out on some things. I'd rather stay with WhatsApp than go to where my data will be safe. So it goes a long way to show us that, at least for the ones that we know, Africans, we do not really care that much about our data.
So maybe it's not that we don't care about our data. It's probably because we don't care so much about data with some of these apps. So I don't know about social media apps, but when I'm doing other stuff, maybe browsing the internet, for example, when you're on Chrome, that there's incognito tab, and I am willing to bet that a lot of people use incognito tab when they want to hide their search history. So maybe we don't care so much about social media apps, especially when you consider the fact that you can, like, our understanding of privacy might be very limited, but on other apps that we use, we are probably more conscious about privacy. You don't want people to find out what you're doing, and so you may take some precautions on these other apps. So it's probably a social media thing, because really, like you said, all I waste my time on social media, on a social media app that very few people I know are using, when I could just forgo anything that it is that they are supposedly taking away from us. So I don't know.
Yeah, I think we should just start from the basis of, do you even pay attention to privacy settings?
I don't. It's only on a man that reads it.
Yeah, exactly.
It's an unnecessary stress, please.
Spare me.
just scroll down to the end and agree to everything. At the end of the day, would we say Africans, for instance, really care about who owns their data, what they have access to?
We don't really care. Let's just accept that fact.
Well, is it really an African thing? You know, it's just...
I disagree.
We have insights into Africa, so you may think it's just Africans.
I think between Africans is that it's not like we don't really care about our data. It's the fact that there are really no alternatives that we can comfortably or safely use. So, for example, with Nifemi's example, where she said, if you're given the option of moving to Signal and still sticking with WhatsApp, most people choose WhatsApp because a lot more people, they know on WhatsApp. So although the alternatives, most people don't really use Signal or any of the other privacy conscious messaging apps, privacy conscious in quotes here, as much as you'd say use WhatsApp, because WhatsApp is more popular and more people use it. So it's more of, there are not so many options, or that most people don't really know about the other options they have.
Yeah, I get that part, right? But yes, there's no alternative, right? But someone like me, I know, rather than do something shabby or do something that has a lot of hiccups, I'd rather not do it at all. But yeah, there's just something unique about Africa, like I was saying, and we usually respond to technology in different ways. So for instance, recently we just heard that Central African Republic has adopted Bitcoin as a legal tender. So Bitcoin is still confusing technology all over the world, but here's an African country that adopted it. So yeah. I feel like there's always an alternative, there's always a choice, where no matter how much your backs are against the wall, maybe I'm jumping ahead of the gun, maybe there's not so much to celebrate about Bitcoin. So but Bolu, do you have some insight for us?
Okay, I think you might be right. We might not really have much to celebrate about, because, yeah, you might have choices, but how good are those choices? And Central African Republic has made a choice, and from the looks of things, it might not really be the best choice for them. I could be wrong. Looking at where the country is right now, I don't think that would be the best choice for them right now. They recently made Bitcoin a legal tender, the second country in the world and the first African country to do that. And thinking about it, El Salvador was the first country to do that. And since they did that, we've not really seen any signs of improvement. If anything, things got worse. Recently, the International Monetary Fund said they had, like, the chances of them paying back some of the debts they owed, as now, like, the chances are now very low. like they are owing so much now. So things actually got worse for El Salvador after making Bitcoin a legal tender. And now we now have an African country that has that 70% of its population do not have access to the internet. Electricity is not really that much of a thing in CAR. This technology, most when you know that percentage of people living in a particular country don't have internet, you can almost deduce that they probably don't really know that much about Bitcoin, and now they've made Bitcoin a legal tender. I really don't understand, you know, the rationale. I was in a spaces recently where they were talking about it, and I think some people are of the impression that it might actually be how do I put it now without shooting myself in the leg? That it might be a corrupt, do something sketchy around the financials of the country. I don't know how exactly, but some people have that opinion. And some people are also saying that CAR is a very close ally of Russia. And now that SWIFT is down, SWIFT is an international a way where countries send, you know, money to each other. So it's like an international system where you send money across countries. But now Russia has been banned from that, and cryptocurrencies naturally seem like the best thing after that. So people are trying to connect the dots.
So for all this, right? It on paper looks like something that is laudable. Of course, 3 years from now, if you put it on Google, the first African country to make crypto a legal tender, CAR will come out. So for one, that's a prestige for them. But as you said, the rationale, I don't get. But then it's almost, I think, looking at it from an angle, it's easy to push, I don't want to say an agenda, it is easy to push something when the population is little. You get. So they might not be looking for a mainstream, big kind of adoption, right? When it's only a little population you have to control. I think it's something that you can be able to push and follow through. On Nigeria that is big, at least we have a high number of people that have access to the internet. So I'm just hoping for them, but I think it's just for the ground.
I have a theory. Yeah.
Okay.
I have a theory about this, right? I don't think it's a misfiring decision or a decision that could backfire for now. It's also my own opinion, but think about it. When any African country gets on the bad side of Western government, what happens? Restrictions, trade bans, and all of that. They can't trade with the outside world because probably don't have access to dollar. So just the way Bitcoin supposedly gives people the freedom from the man, that freedom from the government, from the bank, and all of that, shouldn't it be given small countries that probably wouldn't be able to stand toe to toe with the bigger countries on a normal day? But shouldn't it be giving them an advantage, not being under subservience of the West, as it were? So
I think the small countries should pay their loans back when they're done with their debt. Because they feel they can step on these people's toe and get away with this. Now, Bitcoin, crypto can even save them. They have to finish up all their debts. Then
that's just the truth.
We can talk about that thing.
Crypto is not a magic wand. We should also keep in mind that the Central African Republic, the currency they use is actually used by six African countries, the CFA franc. So the central bank of those six countries did not even know that CAR was going to make Bitcoin a legal tender. So the news was sudden, and then you think about it, there wasn't really enough preparation for it. Do the people really know how to use these things? Shouldn't there be some sort of sensitization first? When you begin to ask those questions, you begin to see that what is going on here is actually really deeper than what we are seeing on the surface. So I think there are a lot of questions to be asked, and there are a lot of questions to be answered. You can say what you want to say, Tim Gazin.
Okay. So the way I see it is that when sanctions are placed on you, they don't exactly tell you that you won't be able to trade with the outside world. They just tell specific people. When this guy tells you he wants to buy stuff from you, don't bother replying him. Whether you're using cryptocurrencies or whatever, if I say I'm not transacting with you, I don't see how the medium of payment or transaction will suddenly sway me. So probably they could be able to get stuff on the black market, which I think people have already been doing without cryptocurrencies. I don't see how cryptocurrency helps you bypass regulations like that. But the other angle, so we're talking about how the country may not be at the best place to use cryptocurrencies. And I'm just wondering, the fact that it's made legal tender, is it the must that everybody uses it? Because if everybody's not using it, then it's only people who have cryptocurrencies for one that can transact in it. Like I can't buy stuff or pay for stuff if I don't have cryptocurrencies. And if you come to me, let's say I'm a merchant, and I say I'm not accepting cryptocurrencies, or that I don't have the means to accept cryptocurrencies, I assume you probably have to like look for alternatives. So except it's probably mandated by law that you must accept that, I don't know how that's a very serious problem for them, especially at these initial stages.
That reminds me, sir, of Inaira.
Oh, yeah.
Nigeria, their elder brother.
Central Africa Republic has a lot of questions to answer for one, but we have our own questions. Yes. What's the point? Sorry. What's going on about this?
Exactly.
The Inaira.
Yeah, interesting point that Tim Gozum actually brought up. So there's the fact that it might not be a compulsory thing to actually accept cryptocurrencies as a form of payment. But I think it still behooves a government to be sure that what you're actually doing could benefit your people, could actually make things better. And the way they rushed into this kind of shows that they've not really done their homework. They've not really researched how this could actually benefit the country. But again, we might be talking too early. The crypto markets for a while now has not really been doing well. Maybe it can go skyrocket again to 100k, and we might see people from Central African Republic coming to do vacation, showing us that. Yes,
I'm
showing us that.
I'm just curious, is it possible that the government is actually holding some Bitcoin of their own?
Definitely. Because if you are going by what happened in El Salvador, the government of El Salvador has been buying Bitcoin steadily. Like buying up Bitcoins. I think, I don't know how much they started with exactly initially, but I know there was a time they bought about $10 million worth of Bitcoins. So it's very likely that the government...
I think about it, that the government is now an active crypto trader.
And the continent have not really come out publicly to say that they're embracing crypto. Anyways, agenda must adjourned.
Interesting.
Nigeria's Inaira is still, I don't know, we've not really seen that much. They actually got an award recently. I think PwC did a report where they said that Nigeria's Inaira, I think, was one of the central bank digital currency that was launched very well. And I don't know. Well,
how many have been launched? Before you've been saying that. How many have launched?
Okay, that was a weird report, right? I respect PwC for a lot of things, but come on. What did they launch very well? The adoption has not taken, and in fact,
but the numbers say otherwise. So, like the numbers PwC gave us, they said the speed wallet that the Inaira is using was downloaded in about 160 countries.
Yes, I downloaded it out of curiosity.
By how many people?
I downloaded it out of curiority. I'm like, what is going on?
Over 700,000 downloads.
Yes,
contribute 200 million people in Nigeria and possibly more in the diaspora. That's like a drop in the ocean. I beg.
So 700,000.
As their,
has what?
I don't know what to call it.
They've not achieved the job market.
You know what? Let's leave this story, because this Inaira thing confuses me a lot on a daily basis. So let's just calm down first. Inaira.
And wish CAR the best.
CAR, yes. I hope you don't
check back in a few months.
Yeah. We hope it doesn't end up like El Salvador, because come on. I was trying to play devil's advocate. I don't see how Bitcoin helps anything. So, but yeah, let's try and leave all this government and Yawala. What a Nigerian startup, Eden Life, a lifestyle startup, a hospitality, or however you want to tag them. They recently announced their expansion to Kenya. And yeah, what's the story behind that, Onome?
Yeah. So I can get your confusion on what to call Eden, but they said they're a concierge service, so let's go with that. But yeah, basically Eden expanded into Kenya last year, but they just announced this year, that was last week. And as they expanded into Kenya, what they did was they acquired Link, is basically the Eden of Kenya. It's just that Link does on-demand services rather than subscription-based services. But yeah, they've been on it since last year. They got introduced to themselves in November last year. And then they integrated by December. They got their first paying customer by December. And yeah, they've moved on from that to actually announcing that they've acquired Link.
Interesting. So what do we expect from the Link acquisition? Are they going to be offering more diverse kind of services? Would they try to transfer Link's products to Nigeria? So how will it all work?
Well, I spoke with Akini. Akini is the Eden Kenyan country manager. And she said that for them at Eden Kenya, what they're going to be doing is importing some things from Link. So at Link, they offered several services. They offered carpentry, they offered basically a lot of gig work, a lot of informal jobs. So that's what they offered. So eventually they might bring in some of their old products, old services. But the only new thing that they are going to add to the Kenyan services that is not being done in Nigeria is beauty and nails. So they are going to be offering spa services and all of that. But she did mention that they are not going to be offering some things like carpentry because that is very time consuming.
Yeah, it just made me remember my experience with a carpenter recently. So now a lot of artisan work, like informal trading work, it's usually very tricky in Nigeria. So I'm really fascinated by companies that are looking to standardize stuff like this. Did they mention anything about babbing? Let me know.
Actually they didn't. But she said something that was actually interesting. So with Link, what they used to do was on demand. So if you want them to do something for you, you just contact them, and it's one of. So say you want to do a TV stand, and you go to Link, I want a TV stand. Link connects you to the carpenter that is going to do the TV stand for you, and maybe you pay half of the money deposit, then that's all. Maybe when they are done, that's the last time you're going to contact Link. So what they did was do a lot of B2B, because that helps them.
Okay.
But COVID-19 now spoils everything. A lot of their business customers couldn't pay anymore because of COVID-19, remote work, blah blah blah. So that was what even gave Eden the in into acquiring Link. But apart from that, she said something that is interesting about subscription services. So I asked her, if subscription services would catch on in Kenya, because based off what they were doing before, it was on demand. Now they are introducing subscription services. So she gave an example of for example, you want someone to clean your house, and each month you pay the person 10,000 naira. That is already a form of subscription.
Yeah.
This is just like them doing it in a way that is recurring. So you just automatically pay for whatever services you're doing. So it's not like subscription is something that is so different from what you're doing. But they're also going to have issues with getting people to accept certain cultural differences in the way they're going to do things. For example, she said that in Kenya, if you have a cleaner, the cleaner is going to be your babysitter, your cook, and everything, basically. But with this now, the cleaner is going to be only the cleaner. So you're paying the cleaner to be a cleaner and a cleaner only. So there's also going to be that cultural shift for Kenyans. How are you going to work with that?
Did she explain how they're going to do that? Because now that you mention it, why would someone who already has a nanny and a cleaner and all in one package, why would that person?
She hammered a lot on education, on educating people, on.
Okay.
So basically, that was the
education.
Yeah, educating people. I don't know how that is going to work, but it should be interesting.
Okay, that's an interesting one.
I don't know. I'm so skeptical about the whole acquisition. Just looks like a bad move. So I'm trying to understand what they do. Like when you do an acquisition, you're supposed to acquire someone either in a line of business similar to yours, or maybe someone that you want to get into his business or something like that, right? And Eden Life is basically home services. I want to get my clothes washed. I want food prepared and stuff like that. And then these guys previously connected people to informal workers.
So actually, Link does what Eden does. So there's really no difference. It's just that Link offered more services and it was on demand. It wasn't subscription. But every single thing
it might just
Eden
be
does,
Eden diversifying.
Yeah, the simplest way to actually look at it is this is the easiest way to enter into the Kenyan market.
Yep.
The whole hassle of registering, getting a new company name, company registration, so many hassles out of the way because Link already has all that. Mm-hmm. You don't have to start setting up in Kenya from scratch. So by acquiring Link, with just that acquisition, they already have all they need. So I think CC Hub did something similar like that with iHub. That was in 2019, I guess. So it's actually one of the easiest ways to enter the Kenyan market. And however way you look at it, there are so many possibilities that could come up. And it has gotten me thinking about the venture capital landscape and how different startups come with huge promises to disrupt this, to do this and that. But somehow, venture capital seems to be slowing down. What is going on? I mean, what happened to the whole lofty promises and the whole future?
The bubble.
And all of that.
The bubble is
bust. Let's not say the bubble is bust. Let's hear from Chimbuzi. Chimbuzi has the bubble bust.
I don't think you can say the bubble. So, it's just a case of venture capital globally slowing down. It's not just an African thing. So it's slowing down everywhere. And so if you look back at 2020 when the pandemic was about to start, a lot of people were worried that venture capital activity were going to be disrupted. So you had to do due diligence, but now you couldn't travel anymore. You had to meet up with founders and all of a sudden you couldn't travel to where they were or they couldn't travel to where you were to meet you. So it disrupted activities. And if you remember, African startups raised less money in 2020 than they raised in 2019. So that's one of the effects of COVID-19. But after a while, investors got a hang of it. They found a way to do due diligence. I think they wrote an article about an investor that was doing due diligence during the pandemic, like basically how he was doing it. So they figured out a way around it. And you saw
the stage of TechCrunch, right?
Yes. So you saw a surge in investments. And now it's looking okay. The pandemic is over. It's almost like that rush, that thing we are rushing to go and meet has finally come to meet. There's really nothing to miss out on. And then it's also not helped by the fact that late stage startups that have IPO'd, they're not really doing so well. So you IPO and it's your valuation comes crashing down. So that's one of the reasons, because COVID-19 accelerated it, but it didn't just stop the moment COVID-19 looked like it was abating. So everybody just carried it over 2021. They were still doing like mad deals. So last year, African startups did like $5 billion in, or approximately $5 billion in venture funding. So looked like it was a very good thing, and really it is, or it was a very good thing. But now you're seeing a situation where what's happening outside in other parts of the world may start to affect what you call it, investment activities here. So like in the US or parts of Europe, it's almost like investors are taking a step backward. So they're no longer doing too many late stage deals. So you may have noticed that guys like Tiger Global are investing more frequently in African startups. And they are now, and not just African startups, they're also investing in like early stage startups. And then I think it makes a lot of sense. So late stage guys are now, they are no longer being evaluated on the basis of a promise. You're supposed to show us full working. So now, early stage startups, you can still make a lot of, what do you call it? You can still make a big killing on early stage startups. So previously, where you could be raising at 70 to 80x your revenues. Now, a lot of startups would probably have to do 10x, 20x instead. So it's too early, though, to say how it affects Africa. We are seeing, so I think it was last week that we were wondering, why is it that we are seeing very little fundraising activities? And it turns out that this, like April was on course to be like the lowest so far. So we've had funding growing from January to February to March. And all of a sudden, I think April was like 140 million or so compared to 600 and something in previous month. Fortunately, one startup kind of saved the day. Sun King raised like 260M, and that pushed up what was raised in April. But then when you take out one person's fundraising, it looks like the valuation is actually...
Things are slowing down.
Yeah, things are slowing down. So it's too early to see how it's going to affect.
So you can't say anything about the bubble now?
Yeah, we can't say it's a bubble. It's probably that investors, they're no longer that... Like, you're now beginning to value these guys as serious companies. No longer startups, no longer promises. So you now have to deliver. You cannot tell me you're banking the unbanked. Manuel shared a tweet where someone was like, six African startups went, founders went to Silicon Valley to tell them how to bank the unbanked. That era is over. Now they're asking you, okay, fine, you said you want to bank the unbanked, but who have you banked? So you can't be telling me three years later that you have to be showing me what is happening. So you can no longer just be raising on vibes anymore.
Extra banking, the one that have been banked already.
Yeah, 6 years ago, founders were going to Silicon Valley.
So yeah, I still want to know who those founders are.
They are pretty obvious now. I'm not going to mention names. Then now people are going to Silicon Valley with Web and they want to still bank the unbanked. And I'm laughing. Come on.
Well, the bank unbanked have to be banked.
Manuel, don't spoil my market.
Oh, yeah. News market. It's pretty obvious.
Tell us about it now.
Okay, Bolu, please sell your market.
We have our market. Web3. Okay. We have a Web3 focused event coming up, the TechPoint Africa Blockchain Summit. And we are going to be deconstructing everything Web3, blockchain, making it as simple as possible. We have some of the biggest and most known names in the ecosystem, and they will just be taking us through the journey, what it has been like, how they've been able to make a name for themselves in the industry, the opportunities that are present, and how not just how Africa in general can harness these opportunities. We've announced some of our speakers today. We still have lots and lots more to announce. Coming up, we're going to have the likes of Hilary Omitogun from Nestcoin. She's going to be telling us how she was able to grow herself in the space, in the Web3 space, being a designer. We have Sayas between a lot of things around finance generally and the crypto ecosystem. So we'll be telling us more about that. And also you'll be asking the likes of Gochukwu Arunu, the CEO and co-founder of Send Finance. and also the CEO and co-founder of YCrypt. It's just going to be absolutely amazing. We have NFT artists that will be coming, telling us how to mint those NFTs or those grandmother and grandfather pictures that you think you can make money off. Yes, they'll be teaching you how to do that. And also the technicals. Things are very technical in the Web3 space. And there's a lot of opportunities there. You said...
Don't let everything out of the bag. Anticipate. Okay. How do they register?
Okay, good. So go and register. Okay. Go to blockchain.techpoint.africa.
Exactly.
Register. And if you're an elderly person and your children or your grandchildren start taking interest in your pictures... Just give them close marking. You might be good at the end of wherever you're heading.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you, Bulu, for that event. Is a really important one, and to help us understand this whole space, this whole hype, and help you position yourself for the future. Yes, that's the main conversation. So don't forget, head over to blockchain.techpointofafrica. We're going to be linking to the website in the description for you to register. Also, if you want to see the list of confirmed speakers, we'll also be linking to that in the description. So yeah, we've talked about a lot of things, right? The fitness applications, the Central African Republic's acquisition, adoption of Bitcoin as a legal tender, however surprising that may seem. Then there's Hidden Life's expansion to Kenya, and of course slowing or the global venture capital landscape, which of course this is just like the tip of that iceberg, right? There's a lot to uncover in that space. And if you have any thoughts, kindly share with us. You can email us at podcast@techpoint.africa. You can tweet at us with the hashtag techpointafricapodcast. And if you're listening to us for the first time, where can we get this podcast? Anybody?
Okay, you can get it on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts. Please, which other podcasts are there?
Wow. So,
there is iHeart Radio.
Yes, Teacher. Yes. By the way, we promise we'll bring Miwa today, but unfortunately, I haven't found a job. I've not found a job in the police station yet, so we can't drag. Yeah, he's still around with us, and yeah, just experimenting with a new structure. So, yeah,
shout out to our producer.
Shout out to Miwa. He's hearing everything we are saying, and of course, that's it. Thank you very much.
All right,
he's waving now.
Everyone.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I'm sorry if you notice anything, any issue with the sound or our coordination. We're recording this remotely, we're all doing public holiday. While still looking for ram meats, even though Bulu is saying this is not the one to eat ram for.
It's not the ram one.
Okay,
people should start identifying these celebrations.
Okay. Yes, we should just give us meat. So yeah, thank you for listening to the end, and see you in the next one. Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.